Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman is on assignment. Here's what we're looking at. Chicago's transit system is facing a massive fiscal cliff in a little over a year, and some lawmakers are calling for major reforms. We sit down with leaders from CTA, Metra, PACE, and RTA for an in-depth conversation about the future of public transportation. And now to some of today's top stories. Testimony kicked off today in the corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Madigan's attorneys and federal prosecutors made opening statements yesterday. Today, lawyers for Madigan's co-defendant Michael McLean made theirs. McLean is a longtime associate of Madigan. They're both charged with racketeering, bribery, and wire fraud. The government says they engaged in a variety of corrupt schemes that McLean's attorney said today weren't bribery, but relationship building and lobbying. Former state lawmaker Carol Senti was called as the government's first witness. The trial is expected to run at least 11 weeks. The longest-serving exoneree in state history files suit against police and prosecutors. Jimmy Soto was convicted of a double murder in 1981 at just 20 years old, but last year prosecutors asked a judge to vacate the convictions of Soto and his cousin David Ayala. Today, attorneys announced they were filing a federal lawsuit against Chicago police officers, Cook County prosecutors, the county, and the city, saying Soto was framed.
What really is the measure of justice for someone who spent 42 years in prison? The conditions I spoke were horrendous, and the psychological toll and the physical toll that it took upon me, I don't know if we can actually put a metric to that. What would really be the just compensation? Are those who are accountable really going to be held to that responsibility of putting me into the prison?
Soto says he plans to get his law degree to help other people who were wrongly convicted. A Chicago Department of Law spokesperson tells WTTW News the city had not yet been served with the suit and doesn't comment on pending litigation. Mayor Brandon Johnson announces his seventh and final appointee to the new Chicago School Board. Rafael Yanez is a Chicago police officer who unsuccessfully ran for 15th Ward Alderman in 2015 and 2019 against Alderman Ray Lopez. Yanez rounds out the new board that Johnson named after the abrupt mass resignation of his previous hand-picked board amid Johnson's dispute with CPS CEO Pedro Martinez over district finances. The new appointees are set to officially join the school board on Thursday and hold their first regular meeting on November 1st. It's been a marathon, but the finish line is in sight. Ish. Election day is 2 weeks away. Early voting is up and running across the state, including in all of Chicago's 50 wards. As of last night, the city's Board of Elections says it's received nearly 87,000 early ballots, almost 57,000 of those via mail. You can visit our website to find your polling place and check out our voter guide for all the information you need before you cast your ballot. Up next, what it's going to take to prevent public transit from going over a fiscal cliff. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicagoland Transit is facing trouble. A combined $730 million budget gap in 2026 when federal COVID relief money runs out, and calls from state lawmakers and transit advocates for reform, perhaps as drastic as merging CTA, Metra, PACE, and RTA into a new regional agency. That's an idea the current transit agencies say is the wrong move. The Illinois Senate Transportation Committee just wrapped up a series of six hearings on the importance and future of public transit. Here's what the top Democrat and Republican on the committee told us during an interview earlier this month.
We need a central agency that is going to address safety, reliability, accessibility for the entire region. And that is what is lacking right now. And before we take any vote on funding, We need to see from the agencies what service improvements and expansions will occur, and how will they be implemented, and how can we hold them accountable for all of that?
I think we can all agree that the RTA, or the MMA, as it may be called, eventually does have to have control over all three of those service boards who up until this point have all operated almost in a silo.
Joining us now to talk finances, governance, service, and more are Jim Derwinski, Executive Director of Metra, Leanne Redden, Executive Director of the Regional Transportation Authority, Melinda Metzger, Executive Director of PACE, and Tom McComb, Chief Financial Officer of the Chicago Transit Authority, which says its President Dorval Carter was unavailable due to health reasons. Hope he gets well soon, but thank you all for being here. We appreciate it. You know, you've all expressed concerns about this idea of creating a single regional transit agency. The RTA has been pitching lawmakers on some more modest governance reforms. Leanne Redden, what new or enhanced roles might your agency take on?
Well, we think we've put together a kind of a collection of proposals that would be in response to the things that we hear from the taxpayers and the riders, things that would help us as a collective group become more accountable and deliver the services that people depend on, need, and deserve. I think the key three areas that we've been talking about are in the fare and customer sort of service space, and then on capital reforms in terms of helping the collectively working to prioritize the capital projects, and then working together to ensure that we have service standards across the region that we can all ensure that we know what we're expected to deliver, and then we free up these guys, the three operators, to actually provide those levels of service and do what they do best.
Well, Jim Derwinski, how about that? Metra has been talking about moving more toward a regional rail system versus focusing on commuter rail. Would a more empowered RTA better help you, say, coordinate schedules or fares with PACE or CTA?
Well, with that, I think right now we do a good job of that already. It's the frequency of service that's going to drive a regional rail pattern. The trains are the most restrictive. They're on a single guideway element. It's the buses and where we meet downtown in Chicago that really makes it so that we can have a regional rail system. I don't see how the three agencies aren't working together in that space. It's really been a funding issue all these years about putting out that level of service.
Well, I think that the criticism we've heard from some lawmakers is saying these things have been sort of split up into different functions. But Melinda Metzger, you said at a Senate Transportation Committee hearing earlier this year that you were working in transit when Metra and PACE came into being. Do you think any of the issues that we've been facing now were baked into the system, having for example Metra and PACE established under the auspices of the RTA back in the 1980s?
Well, I think the issue has always been funding. We need more funding in order to put more service out there. But, getting back to the original issue, mm-hmm. when we were all together, there wasn't enough funding for the suburbs, and that's when the suburban mayor said, wait a minute, we need to get our transit systems going. And if you, look back in the history, all the transit systems were going bankrupt at that time. So PACE became into existence to get more service out in the suburbs.
But still, facing those funding issues, to that point today, that you can't necessarily increase the frequency as much as you wish if you don't have that. On the funding question, Tom McComb, CTA President Carter has said, you hear sometimes from reform advocates, merger advocates specifically, saying these efficiencies will create all sorts of cost savings, which, Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning itself has said is not necessarily a guarantee. What's your take on whether there might be efficiencies to be had, or is that something that people really shouldn't be banking on?
Thanks, Nick. I'm glad you asked that question. We have looked at it, and we work very well with our sister agencies here and looking for various efficiencies across the organization. What we have looked at, and we've also looked across the country, and what we see is that we run a highly efficient organization. Any measure that you look at, whether it's operating expense per vehicle mile, per revenue hour, per passenger mile, we're leading the country. So we're right up there against the best. So it's hard to see where those efficiencies are necessarily going to come from. In addition, any sort of large, significant merger, addition of bureaucracy is going to cost something, and it hasn't been clear to us what that cost is going to be and who's going to pay for it.
How do you see that as an addition of bureaucracy? I think advocates would say the idea is we've got all these different boards, all these different appointments. Do you see potential complications in this new system, though?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're an organization. We've been around for 75 years. I know our other service agencies have been around for a long time, too. We've got a lot. We've developed a lot over the last few years in terms of creating those efficiencies and delivering really low administrative costs relative to the service we're providing. And, you know, we're looking forward to continuing that. And really, as my comrades here have said, you know, really it's a funding issue, right? We're short on the funding side of it, and if we want to provide that service that this region deserves, that this city deserves, we really need to address the funding issue.
Well, let's talk about that. Some of those, you know, a lot of the structural funding issues really predate the pandemic. That sort of threw it into sharp relief. One of the things that's come up a lot is the state mandate that, you know, about 50% of operating revenue comes from passenger fares, although there have been reprieves because of COVID's impact on ridership. Leanne Redden, is that something that you and your counterparts were advocating to change before COVID?
Well, it wasn't really a topic of conversation prior to COVID, but I think the effects of COVID have really shown us sort of the challenges that not just the funding structure as a whole faces, but specifically around the fare box recovery ratio. What it forces the service boards to have to do is really just put service out there where they know they can guarantee the most riders. Now, on one side of the coin, that might sound like a good goal and a good outcome, but it really creates sort of these transit deserts and really allows and inhibits creativity, flexibility, and responsiveness to sort of changing demands and needs that these three operators might have. And so it is absolutely something that we are asking the legislature to move away from. But we do think that there's other metrics, and Tom already touched on a few of those. We all have a lot of metrics as to show and prove that we are operating efficiently and can be held accountable.
Well, and to that point, you know, Jim Derwinski, you've also said at some of these Senate hearings that you might have been a victim of your own success because you were running a lean system. Is that a message that you were taking to lawmakers previously, or did sort of the issue of COVID really throw that into sharper relief?
COVID accelerated everything. You know, so we saw before the pandemic, we were already starting to see a shift of the workers into this potentially maybe a Friday, leave a little earlier on Friday. We've seen this across the country, and we've really seen it since about 2014. That put the financial pressures on us in advance of the pandemic. The pandemic just accelerated all of this. So we weren't really concentrating on the 50-50 ratio at that point in time, because every year what we were doing is making business decisions, hold headcount back, cut a couple trains, or maybe get, you know, bonus in on fuel, get a good fuel lock. That was the way we were managing the budget from like 14 to 19. The pandemic actually just accelerated all this and just kind of put it in a bigger perspective that the 50-50 ratio was already running away from us.
When we talked about that, you know, the COVID relief money that's been, you know, helping with some of the budgetary issues at the most recent RTA board meeting, you know, I noticed that PACE has drawn down its full COVID relief money that it got from Congress. What is your agency's fiscal picture right now?
Well, we did draw down the whole amount, and we're investing that amount, so it gives us more funds so that we can put more service on the street. That's our goal. And so right now our situation is that as we proceed into 2026, we're going to be using up that money. You might have noticed that we're putting more service on the street. We're trying to get service out there that will be utilized by our passengers, and we've had some success. We just put our Pulse service on Dempster Street, and the ridership went up 30% within the first year. It's really been phenomenal. Same thing on our bus on shoulder that operates on I-55. That has gone up 600% since the beginning. We've just put a lot of service back on that route for our customers to use to commute. So we're taking that money and putting it into service for our customers.
It's got to be very satisfying to zip down the shoulder past a lot of cars stuck in traffic. you know, Tom McCrone, the CTA, has been pointing out that it provides about 80% of rides in the region, but only gets about 50% of the public funding. Is that, you know, a message that you think has been getting through? Is that an issue, again, that, you know, you've been sort of pushing before COVID that became more of a problem?
Yeah, that's a message that we're trying to elevate. So we want to make sure that, you know, if there's any reforms that are being discussed and they're talking about funding, that we're really addressing the inequities that were present in that formula that was established in 1983. We provide 84% of the region's rides, and yet we get less than half of the funding to support that. And that's an inequity that was based on the formula that was put in place in 1983. So as we're talking about reform and we're talking about the funding that's needed, we really need to address the inequities that are present in that funding formula.
You know, one thing some critics have said is that the RTA already has the power to mandate more coordination among CTA, Metra, and PACE, and that it's not using it. Leanne Redden, how about that?
Well, I have to disagree. There's some expectations of what the RTA could and should do, but there really isn't. The actual powers do not actually exist. And I can give some specific examples.
Please.
You know, in the fare policy space, we are actually specifically precluded from setting fares and creating fare policy for the three service boards. So the best we can do is kind of have some conversations and maybe make some suggestions. That's an area where there perhaps we could relieve some of the regional burden and the broader perspective that these guys, and provide that for the region and allow them to implement the services. I think there's, RTA gets called in almost too late in a lot of the conversations, and it's to mediate a dispute at a service board request. On the service standards sort of side of things, if we were at the table and having a regional conversation to support and facilitate them in their individual planning, that could actually, we believe, could be advantageous. And so sort of advancing RTA into the conversation earlier, also potentially if we're successful in getting more monies, tying monies to those kind of very customer-focused outcomes, I think is an important thing to do as well. And I think it allows us to just deliver the service and hold not just the RTA, but all of us accountable for the monies that we're spending.
Yeah, something more proactive versus reactive.
Exactly.
Necessarily.
Exactly.
Well, we've heard support for this idea from Lake County Board Chair Sandy Hart, who's the only Collier County leader, as well as Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, I should say specifically about the merger proposal. Let's hear a little bit of what President Preckwinkle had to say last year.
Even if our transit agencies work together well now, there have been many years, decades even, in which the service boards were at cross purposes. In the system we now have, there are 47 board members across four boards appointed by 21 elected officials. That means that everyone and no one is responsible.
I mean, that might sound like a lot of board seats, but, you know, the majority of Collier County board chairs are concerned about losing representation under a merged agency, you know, getting just one person versus Metra, PACE, and RTA boards. You know, given the complexity of this current structure, could streamlining things benefit suburban passengers, or do you sort of share that concern about losing representation?
I'm very concerned about it. We cover an area of about 3,500 square miles. We go through 274 communities, and over 80% of the people live in the suburbs. If you take that area and then say, well, it's going to be the appointing authority is not going to be in that suburban area, it would not get the proper representation. There's a lot going on in the suburbs that we need to know about, and having big isn't always better. You know, that's the question. A big board that doesn't get input from the local communities is kind of tough to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, Metra has quite a presence in the suburbs as well. So how about that, Jim Derwinski?
Same as Melinda. I mean, the representation of the suburbs is huge to us. We go through 172 different communities with 243 stations. And I think the way the lawmakers set this up in 1983 and refined it in 2008 really deliberately made sure that everybody's voice was heard. And right now, if you put it all under one organization, I think that voice gets diluted. And I think that's a big concern for a lot of the mayors I talk to out in the suburbs.
Tom McCone, what kinds of conversations has the CTA had with Mayor Brandon Johnson? Do you know what city leaders are thinking about these, all the issues that transit's facing right now?
Yeah, so we've had active discussions not only with the city, but also with the state legislature as well. As you know, the CTA board has four appointees from the city of Chicago and three appointees from the governor of Illinois. And I think the mayor and the mayor's office has been very engaged in this topic and recognizing some of the inequities that are present in the funding and the need for funding across the region to support the transit system that all of the residents of this region deserve.
So more of a funding focus versus getting into the weeds on whether there should be a merger or some sort of, you know, government governance changes.
Absolutely.
Can I just jump in?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think it's important, I think, from all of our perspectives that we do, it's a funding issue that we're facing. It's not a governance issue. And we've seen no evidence that the current proposal on the table actually achieves any of the outcomes of, and the issue or addresses any of the issues that anybody is raising about improved service and those other issues. So I think it's important that we keep that focus, that it's a funding issue, and that's that we do recognize that with funding is probably going to require some reforms. They made some adjustments in 2008, and we recognize, and that's one of the reasons why we've put together some ideas of areas where we could have some reform, but stopping short of saying merging us all into one big mega organization.
Well, and there's also been the idea of $1.5 billion new dollars in annual transit funding. House Speaker Chris Welch has said he doesn't expect this issue to get resolved before the end of the spring session, whichever way it goes. Leanne Redden, are you concerned that there might be something coming in the 11th hour, that lawmakers might act hastily?
Well, and I would actually hope they act not hastily, but in due time, because even though we say we run out of our federal relief monies in 2026, the urgency is really now. If we don't have funding certainty by May 2025, as we begin our budgeting process for the 2026 year, we don't, you know, we will have to go in a very different, down a very different path than the path that these guys are all going down now. They've shown that they, with flexible money, that they can deliver creative services and deliver new fare products, accessibility projects and programs for people with low incomes, for example, new services out on the street. And if we have to about face on all of that, if we don't have funding certainty by May 2025, we're going to have to start talking about the unfortunate idea of massive service cuts and fare increases. And so that's, May is our deadline.
Well, and, you know, there's been numerous challenges that, you know, the agencies have been facing, some, you know, more individual to others. I know part of CTA's challenge has been hiring enough bus and train operators to get service levels where you want it to. Tom McCone, where do things stand on staffing and on restoring some service?
Yeah, we've had a great response. So over the last couple of years, as you know, we've embarked on really an unprecedented campaign to hire and train the workforce that's needed to operate the service for Chicago and for the region. And over the past 2 years, we've hired over 2,000 people. Last year, we're going to hire over 2,000 people. This year, about half of them are bus operators. That allows us to fully restore that bus service and to fully restore that rail service by the end of the year. And ridership has responded. We have seen ridership increase by 14% this year. We are the second fastest growing agency in the country, second only to WMATA, who opened a new line this year.
Well, and, you know, we talked a bit about changing ridership patterns when people are going in regional versus commuter. What sort of response are you seeing? What sort of changes are you seeing, and how have you been able to adapt to those?
Commuter rail was affected the most nationwide. Our worst day was 97.2% down from our pre-pandemic levels. And what's not been established yet is a plateau. We haven't stopped seeing growth. And the other thing that hasn't been established yet is a ridership pattern. Any given day of the week, we see new high numbers and kind of scratch your heads of why did that happen? You know, it wasn't a concert today, or there wasn't it. Everybody wanted to go to work today. So it's really what we're seeing, our biggest growth is the discretionary market, not the typical 9-to-5. It's more the people that come in but want to have that midday train, the regional rail model, to get home or to go to a baseball game or doctor, whatever. And we're continually seeing more and more new riders. Like our data suggests about 25% a year right now are new to Metro. We consider that anybody less than 1 year at Metro.
You know, we mentioned there was the series of hearings over the summer and the fall. And it wasn't just, you know, merger and funding. It was, you know, economic impact, climate benefits, people who are transit reliant. Melinda Metzger, do you think that the message to lawmakers about the importance of transit got through? How do you feel like those conversations have been going?
Well, what I heard at the hearings was that everybody likes the service we provide. They just want more of it. So I'm hoping that's what got through to lawmakers. And I think the important part is that we need the funding to do that. And we are also seeing a lot of weekend ridership resurgence, late night ridership resurgence. It's not the typical 9-to-5. And so we need to be able to put more service out to do that.
We've got about 30 seconds left. Leanne Redden, are you confident lawmakers will come through with the funding that's needed here?
Well, I certainly hope they do, and they've proven in the past that they're willing to work with us. It's been, I think, a very open and earnest conversation, and I think they recognize the role the benefits of the transit system has, because if we don't have the transit system in existence and even better than the one we have now, the region will not have the economic vitality that it does.
All right. Well, I know this conversation is going to be going on for many months to come, but we thank you all for joining us. Jim Derwinski of Metra, Leanne Redden of the RTA, Melinda Metzger of PACE, and Tom McCone of the CTA. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
And we're back to wrap things up right after this. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. You can also stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. We preview a new Chicago Stories documentary following the destruction on the city's west side after the assassination of Dr. King. And the grand opening of a South Suburban brew pub that serves as a tribute to the founder's late son. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching, stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its 20 attorneys recognized in the 2025 edition of the Best Lawyers in America.